Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and today's conversation is with Tom Davenport, Distinguished Professor in Information Technology and Management at Babson College, and co-author of Competing on Analytics, The New Science of Winning. Tom, government agencies don't compete, but they definitely have a use for strategic analytics. Would you describe how analytics and fact-based decision-making can assist government agencies?
Sure, Michael. There are a lot of opportunities. And I think, you know, while government organizations may not be competing on analytics, you're starting to see some evidence that they are transforming themselves, beginning to transform themselves through the use of analytics. You see it in certain sectors. Certainly, intelligence has often been about analytics, and they're heavy users of it and have been for a while. The big initiative there is, how do we get different intelligence agencies in the United States to share all that data? Healthcare, huge issue right now. How do we use comparative effectiveness analytics to know which treatment is really most effective and most worth paying for? How do we use analytics to identify the patients who are most likely to contract diabetes, say? Diabetes and congestive heart failure account for only about 30% of the patients in Medicare, but they account for about 75% of the spending. So if we can identify a diabetes patient before they actually contract the disease and head it off through diet and exercise and behavior, you know, that's great for the government and great for the patient. So big initiatives in healthcare. Taxes, I'm afraid, are another area where analytics are pretty heavily used to kind of identify the people who might be underpaying or not paying at all their taxes, and to go after them and to figure out, really, you know, just as with other organizations, tax agencies have to segment their customers, so to speak, and identify the ones who are both most likely to be not paying and those who are most likely to be responsive when you're trying to collect, because you can't go after everybody with equal vigor. And then certainly in the military, there have always been a lot of analytical activities related to supply chain. The Army, in particular, very focused on kind of the human supply chain of how do we attract people to enlist in the first place and who's most likely to stay with us over time, so we can kind of focus our efforts on keeping the people in who we think have a good chance of doing that. But all sorts of opportunities, I think, but still early days.
Yeah. In your report for the IBM Center for the Business of Government entitled Strategic Use of Analytics in Government, you outlined the Delta model for assessing analytic capability. Would you describe the model and how these traits apply to the public sector?
I think, you know, even if you're just listening to the radio, you can remember this fairly easily. So D is for data, as you suggested earlier, Michael. You got to have good data, and organizations that are really competitive about this tend to think a lot about, well, what might be something new or unique that I don't have already in terms of data that could really help this process? So that might be at Harrah's, it's how frequently do the employees smile at customers. That's apparently a big driver of customer satisfaction. So they measure smile frequency. Postal Service has got a big effort to measure how long it actually takes time in transit to get a package through and what percentage of the time does it meet their standards. So getting that data is a big first step. E is for enterprise, and we found that when companies compete on analytics, they tend to view analytics as an enterprise, not as a bunch of little localized silos. So that's combining data, that's combining analytical people in many cases, and also combining, you know, technology and technology solutions. L in the Delta model is for leadership, probably the single most important thing. So, you know, if you've got somebody leading the charge, you'll do very well. In government, I think the best example of that is when Dr. Ken Kaiser was head of the VA, really led the charge on putting electronic medical records in place and starting to do things like disease management and so on with that data. T is for target. So where's your focus. For the VA, it's probably going to be on something involving patient care. For the Postal Service, it's probably going to be around something related to logistics as a primary target, because that's where you spend all your money and that's what creates your performance. For a private sector organization like Harrah's, it's on customer loyalty. So eventually, analytical orientations can kind of spread out into a variety of areas, but you need to start with a target. And then finally, A is for analysts. If you want to be highly analytical, you need to either have some internal capabilities or you need to find them somehow. You know, maybe consultants or contractors can help in that regard, but you need some people who are able to think analytically, who can do the data analysis for you, and even more important, who can communicate effectively with decision makers about what the numbers say. So one of my research organizations calls that, you know, PhDs with personality. It's great to have the math skills, but you also need to be able to communicate and build trust among decision makers.
Now, you mentioned earlier the use of strategic analytics in healthcare. And I was hoping you could drill down a little more in terms of where do you see it being used most effectively? Evidence-based medicine, disease management, and even with Medicaid, Medicare fraud.
Yeah. Well, it's happening in all of those areas. I think certainly for, you know, to make healthcare reform really work, we're going to have to, you know, not just insure more people make it possible to get health insurance even if you have a pre-existing condition, but we're going to have to get better at how we actually provide healthcare. And analytics are often the key to that. You have some private healthcare institutions like Intermountain Healthcare in Utah, Partners Healthcare in my neck of the woods in Boston, that have done some great work at embedding evidence-based medicine into actual day-to-day practice. So at Partners, for example, they have a semi-automated system that has care protocols that have been, you know, validated through statistics and research that, you know, if a patient comes in with a certain set of conditions, the system is going to recommend that the physician give a certain drug or follow a certain care protocol. Now, the physician can override, and that's pretty important, I think, in medicine, because the physician may know something that the system doesn't. But increasingly, we're going to do evidence-based medicine and not leave it up to humans to remember all of that, but embed it into systems. And that's what the VA did early on with their electronic medical record system. And increasingly, the leading private healthcare institutions are doing the same thing. Still a small percentage, but that's definitely the direction that it's going. In Medicare and Medicaid, the focus is, as you suggested, disease management to identify the really expensive cases that we can might be able to head off a little bit or at least treat more effectively, and then to identify fraud. Obviously, Medicaid is going to be done at the state level since that's how it's administered. Medicare is going to be done more at the federal level, and a lot of activity, obviously much more fragmented for Medicaid, but a lot of activity in both cases to eliminate fraud for people who, you know, file claims or whatever that don't really deserve to be paid back for them.
You had mentioned also government revenue management. Would you drill down a little bit on that one, too, and explain to us where it could be used effectively?
Sure. So the general feeling is that there's this phenomenon called the tax gap, which is the gap between what we should be paying and what we're actually paying. And most people tend to believe it's about 15%. So obviously, that leads to a pretty big number if you can increase that through analytics. And so the IRS, for a number of years, actually a couple of decades, has been identifying people who are not paying what they probably should be paying based on what other factors we know about them. It's called the Taxpayer Compliance Measurement Program. It probably could be a little bit more aggressive. I think the payoffs from doing analytical work in revenue management tend to be huge, roughly tenfold. So if I were a congressman, I would send money to the IRS to do analytical work because it really pays off in a big way. Sweden is probably, of all the tax authorities around the world is probably the most aggressive one we found at using analytics to not only identify people who don't pay enough, but really to kind of build confidence in the tax authorities that, you know, the rules make sense and that people are encouraged to perform the right behaviors as far as their taxes are concerned. A lot of tax problems or errors, not criminal intent. And I guess a big part of that confidence in the tax agency is confidence that they'll get you if you don't pay what you're supposed to. But they've really built their strategy around it. And as far as we can tell, are the most aggressive revenue management agency. A lot of state work in that regard, too, in the United States. Massachusetts, my state, unfortunately, is they haven't come after me yet, but someday they probably will. Really big on using analytics. Texas is another one. So a lot of, you know, isolated efforts at the states in that regard.
Well, what's interesting is you mentioned Sweden as an example. Are there other international examples where strategic analytics are happening more effectively in the government realm that maybe the governments, local, state, municipal governments in the United States could emulate?
Well, most of our research for the Center for the Business of Government was about the U.S. This Swedish one stuck out. My co-author on this project was Finnish, so maybe she was a little bit more oriented to Scandinavia. But certainly in healthcare, the analytical activities are taking place all throughout the globe. It really, you can look at how likely analytics are. Single best driver is how long ago did they put in an electronic medical record system? So Canada had one a while ago, and they are into analytics in a fairly substantial way in healthcare. The British system, despite being nationalized, does not have a common electronic medical record system. And so, you know, they don't have good data yet. There's some other areas. Canada has done some really interesting work in the fire prevention area. I'm told there are a lot of trees up in Canada, and they own a lot of public land that's forested. And so hard to fight fires in all of those areas equally well. So they use a big geographical database and some predictive analytics to say, where are the fires most likely to occur? And they pre-position firefighting resources in those areas so that they can be ready to fight them. And they say it's saved thousands of hectares of forest land in that fashion. The other area, of course, is in crime prevention, and that's happening around the world as well, a little bit more at the local level than the federal level in the U.S. So New York City.
CompStat.
Yeah, with CompStat and the real-time crime center that IBM runs for them. Mostly reporting-oriented, but still, you know, very much data-oriented, and I was reading some numbers last night. Since CompStat, major crime in New York City is down 74%. So it's really a dramatic story. Probably some other factors going on like demographics and so on, but you got to be impressed by the results there.
And at least you understand the data is there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think the other thing that's key is a lot of different police departments around the country have adopted CompStat, some with much less success. What I think made it work in New York City and in any place where Bill Bratton, who implemented it there, he moved on to Los Angeles and recently retired from there. You know, he engaged the whole police force in it. So everybody had to come to CompStat meetings. Everybody is being asked questions about, you know, what's in your data and why haven't you responded to it and so on. So kind of that leader putting on the organizational pressure helps a huge amount.
So, Tom, from your research, what advice would you have for government agencies in order to get to where they need to be in order to leverage the right amount of analytics?
Well, if you look at the Delta model, Michael, I think the D is not a problem. There's plenty of data in many agencies. There may have to be some remedial work, but there's enough to work on, I suspect. The E is an issue in government because we tend to be pretty fragmented in most agencies. The analytical people aren't talking to each other. You know, in the intelligence community, they're working on that, and having a Directorate of National Intelligence, one of the things they're trying to do is to share more information and be more enterprise-oriented with regard to analytics, but I think still a long way to go. The L word is probably the biggest problem in that we don't have enough highly analytical leaders in government who are able to really press for this and devote the resources to it and so on. So I'm hoping that somehow they will emerge fairly soon. Targets thing is not that tough. I think for most government agencies, they can figure out, you know, where are the most fruitful targets. I was talking to some of the people in the Social Security Administration, and for them, you know, one of the initial targets for analytics was giving people who are disabled benefits as soon as possible, you know, really speeding that process along. So, you know, that's a natural result for an organization that's really, you know, trying to help its constituents. Finally, the A word for analysts. In a way, it's a problem because there aren't that many in government. Less of a problem because you can fairly easily procure them externally. A number of the Medicaid fraud organizations go outside and work with contractors on that. But I think the key in government, particularly in the intelligence sector, is we call people analysts who aren't very analytical. There have been a couple of studies recently suggesting that, you know, in the CIA and the NSA and so on, the analysts tend to rely more on intuition and experience more than analytics, despite the fact that, you know, we have a vast amount of data that's being analyzed at places like the NSA. I'm not sure that enough of that serious analytical work actually gets used in analyst reports and even less so in policymaker decision making. So at the start of the funnel, we do really well. At the end of the funnel, where it comes to analysts and decision makers, not so well with our analytical orientation in government.
What about making better decisions? We will explore this with Tom Davenport, co-author of Competing on Analytics, The New Science of Winning, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.